You know, one of the interesting things about policing is the range of responsibilities that police have. So there's no first priority, but there are several of them. In the largest sense, one of the things I want to do is start reconnecting cops with everyday citizens. So there'll be some strategies you'll see in the coming weeks. I mean, nothing will happen overnight, but in the next several weeks, working to give citizens a voice in prioritizing what they want out of police services in their own communities, and then empowering sergeants, police officers, the rank and file, to really work with citizens to solve those problems. The other thing is getting a handle on the problem of the heroin. I don't want to call it an epidemic, but the heroin problem that we have here in Burlington and also Vermont. Not only the dealing itself, but addiction, how to help handle the addiction problem, and also the crimes associated with heroin, such as property crime, burglaries, robberies. And lastly, we have some notable open cases. We have a homicide, and we also have a shooting. They haven't been closed to arrest yet. I'd like to work to close those.
I want to talk about some of the problems you mentioned, the heroin problem in Burlington and in Vermont. What should be the role of police when it comes to tackling opiate addiction?
One of the things that I'm adamant about is that, you know, heroin is a problem, but it's not a problem that's solved by criminalizing addicts. And so, you know, one of the things I don't plan on focusing on is saddling addicts with a criminal history. But police are out there in the field. If you think about who has the most contact in terms of the government with citizens, it's pretty much the police. I mean, if you were to ask a person, what government official have you seen today? Pretty much everybody who lives in a city has seen a cop at least drive by. So what the police can do in the fight against heroin addiction is really be a conduit for services and information. I think good cops should know who the addicts are, who's on the verge of being addicted, who's gone so far that they may now need to be arrested for doing something like robberies or burglaries, who can benefit from intervention. So just as a source of intelligence in the fight to bring addicts back into the fold, the police are probably one of the best collectors and purveyors and distributors of intelligence about this problem.
How do you ride the line between not criminalizing opiate addiction, but also, as you said, cracking down on the satellite crime, burglary, robbery, things like that, that addicts might be committing?
I mean, sure. First of all, you know, the distinction that needs to be drawn is if you're out there robbing a bank or robbing a convenience store at gunpoint to finance your addiction, that's a criminal act. You're a felon, and incarceration hopefully is in your future. So it depends on the type of encounter. So what I mean specifically is being caught in the act, shooting up, you know, or committing petty property theft. Those are the folks that we want to divert from a life of saddled by a criminal record. But there does come a point where you cross over into crimes that genuinely endanger citizens physically or that are really disruptive to the community. And that's criminal. That's the full bore police response that you'll get.
It's looking like state lawmakers are pretty seriously considering legalizing marijuana statewide. Do you think that's a good idea?
I don't have a position on that yet, and not because I'm afraid to take one, but because I think that there's a lot of consequences that we have to work through. One is that Vermont is a day's drive from about 30 million people who would not have legal access to marijuana otherwise. So legalizing it here is a little different than legalizing it in states that are a little more geographically isolated. I just want to figure out how that would work out. The other thing was a very interesting article in the New York Times that I actually retweeted that I read, and that's that as marijuana gets legalized, it actually drives down the value of cultivating marijuana in places like Mexico. And what quickly moves in then is the opiate crop. So one unintended consequence of legalizing marijuana is it gets grown legally in places elsewhere, and then in places that rely on narcotics as a cash crop, heroin moves in. So we may have, if that research is good, and I've asked people to look at it, if we legalize marijuana, we may have the unintended consequence of driving down the price of heroin in Vermont.
We've heard a lot of talk lately with the Black Lives Matter movement about relationships between communities of color and police all around the country. Burlington is one of the more diverse communities in the state, and we have heard complaints from communities of color about being singled out, sometimes mistreated by police. How do you repair those relationships?
I think that one of the best ways they're repaired is at the individual level of the individual transaction between police officers and citizens. And I think that reason giving is extremely important. I think that if you look at where crime occurs in Burlington, minority neighborhoods or neighborhoods with the highest concentrations of minorities are often afflicted with the highest levels of crime. And one of the positive effects that police can have is by diminishing that crime, by suppressing it, by solving those crime problems as best we can, and elevating the quality of life for minorities that live in these neighborhoods. The worry, though, is when these individual policing transactions happen, and you're dealing with innocent citizens, you're dealing with citizens that might have done something minor, is that it's a disrespectful transaction, or it's a transaction where the person feels like they're singled out, or they feel like the reason why they're subjected to police activity is unfair. And if the cop doesn't negotiate that transaction well, the citizen walks away with a sour taste in his or her mouth. So I think from Ferguson even to Baltimore to New York to Burlington, the problem with policing today is a human problem. It's about how two citizens, one of them is acting in the role of a cop, interact with each other. And if those interactions across the board are raised to a higher level, I think that we'll get away, not from all, but from many of the complaints that we hear about.
There was a lot of controversy before you were confirmed about some statements you made in a paper about racial profiling more than a decade ago in grad school. You've since clarified those statements on our air and other places, but there are still people who have concerns about how you feel about racial profiling going into this job. What do you say to people who are still worried about this?
Yeah, I mean, number one, folks are right to have concerns about race and policing in general. It's what's convulsing policing throughout America today is how policing reckons with race and all of the consequences of how race has been treated in the 200 years prior to today. So I don't begrudge anyone for having these concerns. Number one, the proof will be in the pudding, right, and how the city actually gets policed. But number two, I mean, I have to reiterate, there's each and every citizen, regardless of race, comes with a full complement of their individual rights, and nothing diminishes them. So regardless of the overall offense rate of a given ethnic population, regardless of the incarceration rate, or regardless of how many crime patterns exist where the patterns describe a male black, a male white, a male Hispanic, a female, whomever, committing a crime, that doesn't mean that individual citizens should bear any greater burden for sharing that skin color. And that's something that Burlington police are going to have to live by. And they do, for the greatest part. But citizens will be reassured of that.